From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Rochester's Cornhill neighborhood at the Mount Olivet Baptist Church, and you might have just heard news director Randy Gorbin telling this story. The church recently received a shipment of COVID vaccines to administer to members of the community. It's part of New York State's effort to make sure typically underserved communities are getting vaccinated. Mount Olivet is one of eight churches in the state designated as a vaccine distribution site. Mount Olivet's pastor says all the vaccine openings were filled within 24 hours. There are 250 doses in today's shipment, and demand is far outpacing supply. Does that sound familiar? For now, demand is outpacing vaccine supply just about everywhere. It's been challenging to get appointments for ourselves and for our loved ones when eligibility has expanded. I know from experience how tough this is. And an added layer is technology. In the state of Ohio, recipients are asked to register online. My parents are awful with technology. I've been trying to get them signed up for days, but as I was warned, it's a little like trying to get Hamilton tickets the minute they go on sale by phone or computer. Everything is scooped up almost instantly. The Biden administration has prioritized increasing vaccine supply and access. This past weekend, more than a million doses per day were administered in this country. But I'm sure you've got questions about what to do, what not to do to get your appointment or to get an appointment for someone close to you, maybe parents, like maybe you're in the boat that I'm in. Well, this hour, we hope to answer any questions you have about this and the process. And you can call the program toll free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994, or email us, connections@WXXI.org. We're going to try to help and give you the best information that we currently have. And that's why we're bringing in Dr. Nana Bennett. Dr. Nancy Bennett is the co-leader of the Monroe County Vaccination Task Force, director of the Center for Community Health and Prevention, and co-director of the Clinical and Translational Science Institute at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Bennett, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we hope to have your colleague soon. The co-leader of the Vaccination Task Force is Wade Norwood, and we'll see if we can get Wade on the line with us soon. But let me start with just a basic question about stockpile. You know, Dr. Bennett, we heard this past Friday, Governor Cuomo said that New York State had effectively used up all of its current vaccine stock, and the issue was supply. But various tracking websites indicate that New York State has only used up about 60 to 61% of its stockpile as of today, and that the state and the country with one of the highest rates of vaccination, or at least one of the highest rates of using its received supply, is West Virginia at 83%. So how do we sort of find the reality there with what the governor's saying on Friday versus where things are with these tracking websites?
Yeah, this is complicated. Sadly, everybody has a different tracking system, and it's hard to square the numbers. We do know that in our region, we've used up all the vaccine we had received through week before last. And that's generally how you do it. You don't measure whether you've used this week's supply. This is Monday, so we're talking about last week. And it really depends on whether you're also looking at total doses or whether you're looking at first doses. So those two are distinguished. Some of the tracking systems include second doses, and you can't give second doses earlier than they are due, and you usually receive them a while before they're due. So very complicated to follow all these tracking systems. It's really hard to square the numbers. We just track locally so that we know whether or not everybody's using their vaccine.
Is there forgive my ignorance on this, on first dose and second doses, but I want to make sure that we're clear on this, and I want to make sure listeners understand. For those who have received a first dose, is there a second dose that they will get? In other words, I mean, most people who've got a first dose, they already have an appointment for a second. Is it possible that they're going to show up and they're going to say, ooh, sorry, we actually used all the supply. We don't have a second dose for you yet.
Currently, no, that's not possible. The way that the vaccine is being shipped to vaccinators is in distinct pods. That is, first doses come one way and second doses come separately. So the second doses arrive automatically after the first doses, 3 to 4 weeks after the first doses have been administered.
Okay. And there was briefly some talk in the last couple of weeks led by some leading public health voices, Dr. Ashish Jha, Harvard among them, proposing that we think about saying, hey, the most important thing is the first dose. We definitely want you to get a second dose. But if the rollout's going to go slowly, maybe we ought to prioritize first doses and open up that supply of second doses to others who haven't gotten their first dose yet. And in other words, that was one possible strategy. Doesn't sound like we're going in that direction right now.
I'm not sure exactly what the Biden administration will choose to do. The CDC did come out today and say that you can receive your second dose up to 6 weeks after your first dose. So that's stretching out the time period a little bit. And that might enable us to use more doses as first doses, just because there would be more time for manufacturing in between. It remains to be seen how this will play out in policy, both at a national level and at a New York State level. So we're kind of in a wait-and-see place right now.
But the bottom line for now is, when you make your first appointment, still plan on getting that second dose, right?
Yes, absolutely. And you should definitely plan on getting that second dose no matter what, even if it's 6 weeks after instead of 3 weeks after.
All right. I want to bring in your co-leader of the Monroe County Vaccination Task Force and the CEO of Common Ground Health, Wade Norwood, is on the line with us as well. Wade, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having us, Evan.
I want to start with you, Wade, by asking if the rollout looks appropriate so far. I mean, nothing is going to be perfect in a pandemic, but we know that historically, if we are not careful, that the vaccination and the attention will go to those with power and privilege. What are you seeing so far in terms of a desire to see an equitable rollout?
I think I characterize the rollout so far is different than I think that most of us in this nation expected. I think that we thought that the challenges would be around equitable distribution and uptake, that the challenges would also have to do with mistrust and misinformation. I think that we are all surprised to find that it's also a rollout characterized by the supply shortages. And I think that those things present unique challenges to our ability to meet the first two demands for which we had planned. But I think that the other thing that is different is how incredibly empowered I think our regional community has been through the power of collaboration to really work together and say that all of these challenges are connected and shared, and so we should be involved in addressing and meeting them together.
What are you seeing that needs to happen next, Wade? I mean, what is the most urgent need right now in this process?
I think the most urgent need in the process is, first of all, stable, predictable supply so that we can continue to be planful. And then secondly, getting clear, accurate information so that people can really sort through the confusion to actually understand what they should be doing. And so your inviting us to be here today is an important part of that second aim. So thank you again.
Sure. And I'll let listeners know, we'll grab Marie in Fairport on the phone in a moment. I've got emails already, but listeners, we've got some lines open. If you've got questions or comments about the vaccination process, 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. The email address is connections@WXXI.org. And Dr. Bennett, to Wade's point about supply, again, forgive my ignorance on this, but are you getting a sort of a morning daily update on, hey, you know, we should get another 50,000 Pfizer doses on Wednesday. We should have another 100,000 from Moderna. Is that happening?
Weekly, not daily. So once a week, we get a list of all the vaccinators in our region and how many doses they are to receive that week. That usually comes on Sunday or Monday. And in fact, I've not yet received this week's list yet, but I have heard from a number of the vaccinators how many doses they received. We also have a morning huddle where everyone who's giving vaccine in our region gets together on Zoom and discusses the challenges and successes that they are seeing. And this enables us to be sure that everybody's on track to use their vaccine, but also be sure that any barriers they're facing can be addressed.
Okay. And roughly when you get those weekly reports of what's coming in, of vaccine supply? Does it look like what you expect? I mean, do you have any expectations? Is there a concern that it is drying up, or that, you know, that we are close to seeing a steadier supply?
No, we get kind of what we expect, in the sense that we're told the week before how much New York State can expect to receive. And just to clarify, this is not including the long-term care facilities. That's sort of a separate allocation of vaccine that goes to the pharmacies that are doing that program, and that's at a federal level. What we get told is how many doses New York State is receiving, and that usually comes towards the end of the week before. And as you probably know, this week Governor Cuomo announced that we were receiving about 250,000 doses for the entire state of New York. So that gives you a sense of what the problem is. There just isn't enough vaccine. Last week, our region received just over 10,000 doses, and they were allocated across the region to including the Dome Arena, the convention center, various pharmacies, hospitals, and the health departments throughout the region. That's also, you know, not enough vaccine to vaccinate the number of people who are eligible in our community. So we're really at the mercy of the vaccine supply right now. We are hopeful that it will increase, number one, and number two, we will find out sooner how much vaccine we're going to get for any given time period. Right now, the vaccinators are really caught between a rock and a hard place. They find out how much vaccine they're going to get, and they can't really schedule appointments until they know that, and then they need to use the vaccine up as fast as they possibly can. So it's very difficult.
All right. Well, let me grab Marie in Fairport on the phone first, talking about her experience. Go ahead, Marie.
Hi, I'm 78 years old, and I was very lucky to get an appointment and the vaccine shot at the convention center. It was very well organized, and everyone I came in contact with was helpful and kind. It was very much appreciated, but these people are ready. They are, these wonderful people are ready to give the shots when and if we can never get any.
Marie, how did you get your appointment?
By phone.
You called somewhere.
The number, the VAX number.
Okay, and it all sounded smooth for you.
The phone was outrageous. I mean, that was ridiculous. But I just kept trying and trying and trying.
Yeah.
The actual experience at the convention center was extraordinary.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, and I sounds to me like you feel some level of relief, Marie.
I do. Oh my gosh, yes. As soon as I went in and I encountered all these wonderful people, the stress level just went down enormously. So it was wonderful. They're ready.
Well, that's wonderful.
I don't know where they're finding all these wonderful people.
Oh, there are so many wonderful people. Marie, thank you. First of all, Marie, I feel the relief for you, and I'm really glad you shared your experience. Second of all, your report from the convention center, the report we're hearing at the Dome Arena, the reports we're hearing at Mount Olivet today, and so many different locations are exactly what you're describing. People are happy to be there. There's relief to be there. There's optimism. We just want more of it. Now, your experience on the phones is what I want to ask Wade and Nana about. Your experience on the phones, I understand you feel it was ridiculous, and like I mentioned, with my parents in Ohio, they sort of feel the same way. I hope we have some empathy here. I mean, we've got a population of 328 million people, and many, many, many millions want the shot now, and we just don't really have the infrastructure to handle calls quite to that level. So I get it. I think what we have to do is two things. We have to have empathy for those who are working in this system because they're overworked, but we also have to be able to analyze, what are we doing? Are we doing it efficiently? Is it effective? Does it need to change? So let's ask both Wade and Dr. Bennett about that. So Wade, in this process, you know, so Marie in Fairport is saying she had to make a bunch of calls. She finally gets through here. Where do you want people to go, and what do you not want them to do, Wade?
I think there are a couple of other responses I'd also like to make to Marie's comment, yep, as well, Evan. First of all, that the incredible support that we've gotten from the community in terms of volunteerism. The United Way in its largesse and community stewardship, making available a real effective way for us to receive the volunteer energy and to support the deployment of volunteers to create that kind and caring environment that Marie found. We are a community that understands volunteerism, and if folks want to be helpful, reach out through the United Way website and their phone number. That is very important and very, very helpful. I think, secondly, the comment that you made of the importance of empathy and Marie's word kindness, that we are going through an unprecedented challenge. And as we make our way through it, on both sides of this encounter, empathy and kindness is going to be necessary. I think it really comes back to the issue of the supply. And I am absolutely encouraged by the federal government really organizing itself to be helpful in terms of gearing up supply at the level that it's needed so that we are able to meet the demand, because people are fearful and they are rightly fearful and rightly hopeful of being able to be vaccinated. And my final comment, and then I'll yield to Nana for anything she care to say in response to it, but Marie's testimony is really akin to the conversations that I've been hearing of in the community over the last 2 weeks. There is not only a real sea change in terms of people having had the chance to listen and learn, having had the chance for thoughtful reflection. There is a real community conversation that I think is helpful in terms of overcoming vaccine hesitancy. And we need that conversation to continue. And we need more people to be vaccinated so that they can be the change agent that Marie is, sharing the message with their neighbors, sharing the message with their friends and family of how very important it is that we all take advantage of the advance of science so that we can all be protected and we can beat this pandemic.
That's very well said. Marie sounds like a vaccine proselytizer, and there's so many in our community already. And as I turn to Dr. Bennett here, I'm thinking about her experience with the phones. And as I do, Dr. Bennett, let me read an email from a listener who said, quote, I watched the WXXI vaccine television special, and I was told, don't call us for a vaccine, we'll call you. So I have resisted the urge to call my mother's doctor's office and try to get her scheduled. She's 75 with multiple health conditions that put her at risk. So far, we've heard nothing from anybody. No one has contacted her or me, and I see other people her age or younger getting vaccinated. I feel like we're trying to play by the rules, but we're getting passed by. What should I do, Dr. Bennett?
Well, thank you for that question. Can I say a few words about what
Absolutely.
Marie said?
Also? Absolutely. Yep.
Just a couple of things. One is that I can't say enough about the people in our community who are the vaccinators, and I'm really happy to hear her report. That was the site that she was at is run by the Monroe County Department of Public Health. But there are also hospitals, pharmacies, all kinds of people, health departments doing vaccination across our region. And the quality and kindness of everyone who's been at the table has been just remarkable. So I love hearing that from Murray. With respect to communication, there are also two really critical things. One is 211 is going to start to be a resource for people who have questions about vaccination. They will not be able to directly make appointments for people, but they will be able to direct people to the correct place to go for an appointment, because there is some complexity to who's giving vaccines to which group. And so 211 will be able to direct people to the right numbers, the right websites to ensure that they do have access. The other resource that we have coming online and is just started is a website. It's flvaccinehub.org. And that, again, has lots of information about the vaccine and also will be able to direct people to the correct place to find an appointment. With respect to the question about don't call us, we'll call you, doctors' offices do not have vaccine at this time. The vaccine is being given in public health clinics to essential workers, at large multi-group clinics like the Dome Arena, to essential workers, and also those over the age of 65, at pharmacies and at hospitals to those over the age of 65. The hospitals are slowly working their way through their lists of patients who are over the age of 65 and starting to be able to administer vaccine to them. And they will be reaching out to their patients. I think they've sent emails to many of their patients telling them what the system's going to be. But it will take a while because we don't have enough vaccine. If we had more vaccine, we'd be able to move much more quickly. My best advice is that you can either go and try to get an appointment at a pharmacy or at the Dome, but many of them are fully booked. Or you can wait to hear from your healthcare system. People are getting vaccinated in the hospitals and also at clinics. It's just going to take time because the number of eligible people far, far, far outstrips the vaccine supply at this time.
All right. So if you want to try your pharmacy or try, yeah, you know, try to go get an appointment like the Dome, it's just there's not a lot of it. So the whole the whole concert ticket analogy is sort of it is sort of accurate right now.
The hottest ticket in town.
It is. And I would just say, you know, as much as so for listeners who are frustrated and I as much as I get frustrated every day when I don't get an appointment for my parents in Cleveland. I am excited that their neighbors are getting vaccinated. Every person who gets vaccinated protects you a little bit more. So I want them at the top of the line because I'm selfish about it, but I'm very eager to see everyone get a chance, and I'm grateful for that. Let me get back to some phone calls. David in Canandaigua next. Go ahead, David.
Hi, Evan. I got a couple of quick questions.
Sure.
How soon after a person is vaccinated are they protected?
Let's start with that. Dr. Bennett, you want to start with that?
Yeah, it generally takes about 2 weeks after being vaccinated to develop protection. We know that there may be some protection after your first dose, that is 2 weeks after your first dose, but it's really not complete, and I certainly wouldn't count on it. 2 weeks after your second dose, you should have developed an immunologic response and be somewhat protected. But again, we know that not everyone will develop that immunologic response. There may be people who aren't as well protected. And so at this time, when there's so much virus in our area, we really still have to take all of the same protective measures, which is one of the reasons that I've said to people, you know, we all want to get vaccinated, but patience is not such a terrible thing. We're all still going to have to protect ourselves. We're all going to still have to wear masks. We're all going to still have to physically distance for quite some time to come. So, it doesn't instantly protect you.
Okay.
Go
ahead, David.
I have a second question. Is the booster or the second shot the exact same dose and formula as the first?
Yes.
Yeah, the answer is yes, David. Yep.
Okay, and you cannot mix and match. You can't do Moderna and then the other one. You can't. It's got to be the same manufacturer, one and two.
Yes, that's correct. And not only is it same manufacturer, but you really have to go back to the same place you went for your first vaccine. That may change with time, but as I mentioned earlier, the second doses are being sent automatically to the place where you received your first dose. So therefore, you have to go back to the same place.
Okay, and one last question. If it turns out a person tests positive for COVID and then get vaccinated immediately thereafter, is there any kind of contraindication there or a problem?
We don't recommend that people get vaccinated when they have COVID. So we recommend that you wait until your symptoms have gone away and until you're isolation period is up before being vaccinated. You can also defer vaccination for a period of time if you prefer to, if you've just had COVID.
A couple other points, and then I want to talk a little bit about equity when it comes to vaccinations. First of all, Dr. Bennett mentioned 211. I'm told it's not yet operational for helping people find locations, but they're working on it quickly. I know your team's working on it, and that's going to be very soon. So I'm sure WXXI will report on that the moment we've got that information. So 211 soon will be able to help with that. Not quite.
Right. That's correct.
And I also wanted just to kind of make an addendum to David's call about, you know, getting vaccinated when you have COVID. I heard from an epidemiologist last week who wanted me to stress a point on the air that I thought was really important. Whenever you have millions of people, or in the case of this pandemic, it will be billions of people who get vaccinated eventually, you will have some statistical unlikelihoods, or even some becoming statistical, not even all that odd. For example, someone will get vaccinated that you know, and the next day they'll get diagnosed with actual COVID, or they'll have COVID symptoms, and they will think that the vaccine caused the COVID. The vaccine can't cause COVID, but you can have COVID and get vaccinated because you could be asymptomatic and then develop symptoms. Don't let yourself be convinced by that eventuality that the vaccine is somehow causing COVID or doing all. There will be someone who will have, sadly, a heart attack or some adverse health event that would have happened anyway in their life. It will happen within 24 to 48 hours of getting vaccinated, and someone around them will blame the vaccine. Again, I'm not saying we shouldn't scrutinize the vaccine, but let's be very careful as we see more and more of us with the vaccine, not to overreact to what is inevitably going to be a small amount of stories like this. That is going to happen. And that doesn't mean the vaccine is trouble. The best data we have on the vaccine is that these vaccines are some of the best ever created. That's not, again, that's not me selling the vaccine. That's not me shilling for the vaccine. This is looking at data and science. So let's just keep our heads about that as best we can. And I think David's call had some really good questions. Now, on the subject of equity, I want to talk about driving and distance and who can get this vaccine. So let me read a couple of comments on this here. Jay says, I know several people who've traveled out of county to get vaccinated. Is that a problem? I feel like I would drive quite a long way to get the vaccine if I could get on the list somewhere. And a listener who wants to be anonymous sends us the following and says her mother is 90 and had major surgery in December, and the only appointment she was able to get was in Syracuse at the end of this month. She will have to drive herself there twice for both of her shots, and she's in physical therapy. This doesn't seem right. This is a vulnerable person. There's no one in Rochester that can help with this. That's the question. So let me start with Wade Norwood on this one. When you think about where people are going to get vaccines, I don't even know, Wade, if we want people to go out of county. I mean, I'm not even sure if there's sort of a okay. Dr. Bennett, did you say we don't?
Well, we don't want people to travel these long distances. I mean, it's better to wait a few weeks, I think, than to drive hours to some other county. I just don't think it makes sense.
Okay. And you know, Wade, I'm thinking about all of the conversations we have about transportation equity, when you think about who can get it, who can't. And I think, again, you want more population getting the vaccine every day. You don't want the stockpiles building up. But if we have a system where people are able to use technology that not everyone has, or to drive long distances that not everyone can do, I'm not sure how equitable the system's going to be. How do you see it, Wade?
I think that it is incredibly interesting that we have two different dynamics at play, that there is vaccine hesitancy that is a challenge to equity, and then there is a real desire on the part of our neighbors to be safe. And I understand and I completely empathize with, in a shortage situation, if you can drive a county or two away to receive a vaccine, I understand why people would do it. And so I think what we want to do is exactly what we are doing and what we're doing by literally being here, which is to provide people with meaningful information. The most important thing that we have to do is recognize that the present CDC guidelines are really sequencing vaccine administration by who's at the greatest risk. And as much as I, Wade Norwood, 56 years old, would love to have the vaccine, I recognize how important it is that I am, as the caller before, trying to follow the rules, that really making sure that the vaccine, as it becomes available, is available to those who need it most. And I think it'd be helpful for all of us to understand that our hospital systems, both the URMC system and the Rochester Regional system, have been doing the wisest thing, which is really randomizing access to the vaccine, making sure that there is no game playing, that there is really an attempt to say that we are building a level playing field by category and classification of eligible resident to be a recipient of the vaccine. Hmm. And I think it's very important for me, the travel issue is really the more germane every day, which is for those older neighbors of ours who get a phone call and say, you are eligible to be vaccinated tomorrow at such a time. For those folks who don't have transportation ready to be on demand, who don't have support to be ready on demand, how do we make sure that we're building an equitable system by recognizing all of these socioeconomic factors that might come into play? And that's why I think it's very important that we're beginning on small scale to be able to say, just as we figured out testing going out to the community, just as we figured out immunizations and flu shots in the past to go out to the community, how might we take advantage of these newer vaccines that are coming into the stream that really do not require the same type of handling and storage as the Pfizer vaccine? How might we do more of the Mount Olivet thing to, when the people can't come to the vaccine, how can we get the vaccine to the people? Those are the things that are going to be our opportunities to ensure that a fair and equitable system takes affirmative action to be equitable and fair.
All right. Well, as we get ready for our only break of the hour, for the rest of the program, we're just going to be taking your calls and emails here. Dr. Bennett, before I even get to break, Rob, let me just ask Dr. Bennett to kind of make sure we keep answering a question. I know this is going to come up multiple times in the hour. That's okay. Carol just says, I've heard that sometimes at the end of the day there are vaccine doses available if someone can get to a site quickly. Is that true? And is there a phone number to call to be considered for any available doses late in the day? Is that true, Dr. Bennett?
Most of the clinics are establishing standby lists of people who can come in at the drop of a hat. As Wade said, it's a little bit problematic because you may not have transportation. Really, you just have to ask when you call to make an appointment somewhere whether or not they have a standby list. That has been occurring at some of the larger clinics.
Okay, so I guess just check with different clinics on that?
Yeah, basically.
Okay. Is there a singular number people are asking that they should be calling, Dr. Bennett, or a singular website that will help them?
We wish there were a singular number or a singular website. As we mentioned earlier, 211 will be up and running soon to direct people towards the best place for them to call or go online. And we have our new website, but both of those places don't really have availability. They can't direct you to an available appointment at this point because there's just not enough vaccine. And as a result, they don't have the most up-to-date information about clinics and so forth. But as the supply increases, 211 will be able to help people navigate to the right place for them. And the same with the website.
And what's the website?
It's flvaccinehub.org.
F as in Frank. flvaccinehub.org?
Yes.
.org. FL as in Finger Lakes.
FL. Finger Lakes, right.
Vaccinehub.org for information there. The co-leaders of the Monroe County Vaccination Task Force, Dr. Nana Bennett, Wade Norwood, on the line with us today. Let's take this only break and right back to your questions for them. Coming up in our second hour, bring students back to the classrooms or keep them fully remote? That has been the debate in the Rochester City School District, and for a number of months since the start of the school year, the Teachers Association and the superintendent have been largely on the same page, but not anymore. And we're going to talk about what has changed, what the plan of bringing students back can look like, and how to address the concerns of teachers. It's all next hour with the superintendent, Dr. Leslie Meyer-Small. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tom writes an email asking if Wade can answer the following. Why isn't the state working directly with the school districts to vaccinate their staff on site? The local school districts are telling their staff, you're on your own, so good luck. If you can find a vaccination, more power to you. I know school staff, teachers, etc., who have traveled to Syracuse, Buffalo, Binghamton to get a vaccine. This rollout seems to have no rhyme or reason. If teachers are not vaccinated, the schools will be closed, hence sending the community into a further tailspin. Tom says the teachers should be prioritized. What do you think, Tom? Wade Norwood, that's from Tom.
Well, I think that that is an issue that has to be determined. I absolutely am not someone who would argue that they shouldn't be prioritized, but I think that the strength of what we've been doing to date has really been having the clinicians and the scientific community really guide us in the establishment of these different vaccination groups, the populations within each group, and the pace by which we should move from population to population within a group. I think the worst thing we could do is to start having non-valid measures start coming in and disrupt that. If we do so, then it becomes a free-for-all, and I think it becomes a very dangerous and chaotic environment by which to deal with a public health emergency, short supply, and large demand. So I really think that the communities who are in the sequence of groups 1B and more should continue to engage with the state, with the public health departments, with their professional associations, and let us have the conversation to figure out how we do this decently and in order.
All right.
So,
go ahead, Dr. Bennett.
Add to that?
Yep.
I just want to clarify that teachers are prioritized, but we're working towards them. We're still in the process of doing fire, police, EMS. The Monroe County Department of Public Health will probably be getting to teachers in the next week or two, but they've been working their way, again, through fire, police, EMS, and simply are soon going to get to teachers, but haven't thus far. And as Wade said, we really need to do this in a systematic way because there are certain people who need to keep our society going, and you certainly want to have your police and fire and EMS folks vaccinated. That's very, very important. And obviously, teachers are also incredibly important, and that's why they are included in 1B.
All right, Joanna says, help, I am 80 years old and I use a walker. Trying to stay healthy, I have been out of the house fewer than 10 times since March. I live alone with my dog. I signed up with the New York State site, but I wonder if I should be doing more. I received a letter from the U of R stating that they would be opening center soon, and then I would be notified. Please advise, have I done enough? That's from Joanna. Dr. Bennett?
It sounds like she's done a lot. That's great. I don't know what the timing is of her appointment at the Dome Arena. That's certainly one option, but she may hear from the University of Rochester prior to that, and if so, should take whichever comes first. And the only thing we would say is we would beg her to cancel any appointment she doesn't use so that we can get more people in. But it sounds like she's lined up and ready to go.
Joanna, good luck to you. Let me get back to phone calls. Fred in Brighton. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, hi, y'all. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, I heard when we get vaccinated, we could still become infected. And my concern was, how do we keep the people in our home safe? And in my circumstance, I'm 68 years old, and I would like to return to work after I get vaccinated. But my wife, who has just missed the cutoff, she's 64, she probably won't get the vaccine until late summer. And I'd wonder, maybe I should put off going back to work until she gets vaccinated.
Well, the MD on the panel is Dr. Bennett. You want to take that one, Dr.
Okay.
Bennett?
Yeah. So this is a problem. So when the studies were done, they only looked at the vaccine's protection from symptomatic disease. So in other words, you know, they gave the vaccine to some people and not to other people and compared the outcomes, but they didn't compare whether or not they became infected. They just compared whether they became symptomatic or not. So theoretically, it's possible that you could become infected even after vaccine and transmit it to someone else without ever knowing it. This is, you know, pretty theoretical, and we think that people are likely to be well protected, but we can't say for certain. And it does come into play in a situation that you're describing where you are vaccinated but your family members are not. It's really hard to advise you. The likelihood is that you would be protected. But I think that, you know, to be extra careful, you would probably continue to work from home as long as you could until the vaccine, the virus rates, until the disease rates in our community are lower than they are now. The disease rates are so high that there's a relatively good chance of becoming exposed to someone, whereas once the rates go down and the chances are lower, as they were last summer, for example, then you know, I think the risk-benefit becomes better.
Fred, thank you. Here's a question from Barb in Rochester. Wade Norwood had mentioned volunteers, so let me read Barb's question. I'll kick this to Wade. She says, first of all, what is the plan? It's a two-pronged question. She says, what is the plan to vaccinate the homeless community? Additionally, I have received the first vaccine, and I will receive the second on or around February 8th, and I would like to know where and how vaccinated volunteers can be most helpful. Wade, do you have information on that?
I think that the question of where and how vaccinated volunteers can be most helpful is really going to be answered when the hub is engaging with a specific activity and looking at the specific volunteers that are needed. So I'd really say that first step of getting in over to the United Way is the incredible important first step that helps us understand what volunteer strength looks like. And Nana, I'll yield to you on the other question because of the fact that I think it really goes back to this question of how it is that different groups are being sequenced in terms of vaccination eligibility.
Yeah, Dr. Bennett, I think that's on the question on the homeless community.
Yeah, so the Monroe County Department of Public Health has already vaccinated many of the people who work in the homeless shelters. But they have not yet vaccinated people who live in the homeless shelters. We're anticipating that that will occur sometime in the next month or so, we hope. Ideally, to be honest, we would like to wait until we have the Johnson & Johnson vaccine because it's a single-dose vaccine. As you can imagine, the logistics of making sure that we can vaccinate residents who are homeless makes a two-dose schedule difficult. So we're not sure yet exactly when that will occur, but we definitely have it at the top of the priority list.
Evan, if I may. I would just like to just underscore and thank Nana for making that point. One of the pieces of misinformation that I think is fueling mistrust that I'm hearing from the community is the sense that there are special vaccines for poor people. That makes it sound as if it's an inferior product with regard to safety or efficacy, and that there is some cabal involved to create two different tiers of vaccines and people being vaccinated. And I think it's very important that we as a community, I love the comment that you made earlier, Evan, about patient explanation. I think it's very important as a community that we explain, unpack, and own the exact correctness of the comment that Dr. Bennett made. that when you have a population like the homeless and the unhoused people who are going through their own set of challenges on a daily basis, and we have the opportunity to say, do we ask them to be part of a regimen that requires coming back a second time and add challenges to them and their circle of support? Or do we use the dosage that the vaccine that only requires one dose? I am very much appreciative of the fact that my medical care team, in terms of supporting my living with diabetes and hypertension, tend to make sure that I get dosages that can be one pill for the dose instead of two, because my poor, simple mind, with all the things I have to handle, is really made more peaceful by having a medical regimen that really is manageable. And I think it's important that we understand that what Dr. Bennett said is a sign of love, regard, and concern, respect for the population. And we need to be messengers of that to each other.
All right, back to your phone calls. Gordon and Geneseo next. Go ahead, Gordon.
Based on the low amounts of vaccine, I'm just wondering, how long is someone immune after they've had COVID, and does it make sense for those people to get a shot a little bit later? And I was also wondering how long the vaccine is effective for after the second dose.
All right, Dr. Bennett, this one's come up a bunch, and the answer I keep hearing, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong as a student here, is that the immunity that we receive from a vaccine, we need more data and more time to study, but might in fact be stronger and more durable than getting COVID and recovering, and might last longer, but we need a little more time to see it. Is that right?
That's exactly right. You know, we do think that someone who's just had COVID recently is probably protected for at least 3 months, and therefore could defer their vaccine until, you know, up to 3 months. But just what you said, we do think the immunity from the vaccine may be longer. There are different kinds of immunity. There's the antibody immunity that we can measure really easily, and then there's cellular immunity, which lasts longer and is harder to measure. So until we have long-term follow-up of the studies, we're not really certain how long the immunity from the vaccine will last.
Yeah, and I would just say, Gordon, if you got over a case of COVID last month, you're eligible for a vaccine now. You might want to think about deferring. That's fine, as opposed to just calling and calling and calling and trying to get through and get an appointment for yourself. If they call you and say you're up, I think when we get called, we're all ready to go, because every person who gets the call and goes helps protect the wider community even more. So so I think there's a difference between trying to get in and say, hey, I got an appointment down in Binghamton, I'm going to go get that vaccine, as opposed to, hey, they called me and said I'm up. You know, that's a different circumstance. Yeah. And don't be afraid of that call, because hopefully we'll all get that call eventually. Kathleen in Brighton, got to keep it tight. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Well, I'm in sales, so that might be trouble being tight, but I'll try my best. I'm a manufacturer's rep, and I work covering a territory that provides products to essential businesses. I am in a different city every day, working with different people, and, you know, kind of I see myself as a super spreader event waiting to happen. You know, I do obviously engage in lots of safety measures, but, you know, I've tried to find out where I fit in this whole criteria. I'll be 64 in April, so I don't fit into the age requirement. But, you know, people that engage in the type of work that I do, you know, I cover Western New York, Finger Lakes, Southern Tier. I'm all over, you know, our region. Yeah. So just kind of trying to figure out, you know, I tried writing to Governor Cuomo, but I didn't hear back. Haha. Anyway, just like, you know, where does somebody like me fit in? You know, I think in some ways it would be of service to the state, you know, to vaccinate me because of the, you know, nature of my, you know, the activities I engage in.
So you're wondering when you're going to be eligible. Do we know, Dr. Bennett?
I don't know. They 1B and 1C classifications originally did include a larger number of essential workers. People, for example, who worked in food production, food manufacturing, agriculture. Those particular groups were not included in the New York State move to include essential workers. They really started with just a few groups of essential workers. And so it's hard to know whether they will expand those groups or simply go to further age-based recommendations. So I really can't predict at this point where it will go. You're not currently eligible, as you noted, because you're neither over 65 nor in one of those specific groups of essential workers that are being included.
And as we get ready to wrap, I just want to make sure the audience understands something. This is sort of a strange little thing, but we mentioned the website flvaccinehub.org. Some of our listeners said it's down or it's not working. Oddly enough, if I try to put in www.flvaccinehub.org, it doesn't work. If I take out the www. And just do flvaccinehub.org, it works just fine. So if you're trying to get on it, for some reason, don't do the www, just do flvaccinehub.org. Dr. Anna Bennett, Wade Norwood, the co-leaders of the Monroe County Vaccination Task Force, and I know we're going to talk a bunch. We're so, so grateful for the work you're doing. Thank you, Wade. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much, Evan.
Dr. Bennett, same. I know we'll talk soon.
Thanks so much.
All right, more connections coming up.